This is Real Talk, the podcast with Devin Wieters, where we talk all things inclusion and have a little bit of fun, too. Remember to leave a 5-star review and enjoy the show.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. Today we have Fergie Philippe. He is currently in the Broadway cast of Hamilton. Yes, we did not throw away our shot. Hamilton pun. And he has a lot of great things to say. He is the man. He has a lot of cool behind-the-scenes stuff for you Hamil fans. And he has a lot of other great things to say on race and other social issues. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy our episode with Fergie Philippe.
This is Real Talk, the podcast.
Hi, Fergie. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, hi. So I'm Fergie L. Philippe. Fergino Philippe August is the real name. Fergino itself is basically a combination of my mother and father's name. My mother's name was Sargina. My father's name was Fernando, basically. Grew up in Miami, Florida. Fell in love with performance, I guess you could say, like when I was in pre-K. I've kind of always like been a performer. But I would say that like I really fell in love with like puppetry, specifically the works of Jim Henson. Sesame Street and the Muppets were very, very, very impactful and huge on my life growing up. And I kind of started in the puppetry realm and then went over more to acting and started taking classes when I was like 10. And then went to performing arts high school. From performing arts high school, went to Elon University for music theater. And then after that, I was lucky enough joined the touring cast of Hamilton, Philip Tour, the second national tour. We were the OG cast. We kind of put up that production first, started in Seattle. That tour started in 2018. And then I left the tour in the summer over a year ago. Wow, I can't believe already. I left it over a year ago. I joined the Broadway company this year in January, right before the shutdown. And that's basically it. I live in New York right now. I'm a writer. I'm a director. I'm very recently getting back into puppetry. So I'm a puppeteer. So that's basically me.
So tell us what first drew you to puppetry.
I think, Sesame Street was one of those shows that, I mean, I'm sure for everybody, but I remember specifically like when I was coming up, Sesame Street was really in this place in terms of their core Muppet characters were starting to really expand. Like in the beginning, you know, their main folks were really just Cookie, Bert, Ernie, Big Bird, and maybe the Count. But as I was coming up, that was really the rise of Elmo and Zoe and Rosita and Telly and Baby Bear. And so it was this kind of new era of Sesame Street that was forming. And that's when some of the humans like Alan and Gina were really starting to become a little bit more popular. And it was there was something about the tone of that show that I thought was so incredible. And I think the tone specifically were those characters. And I heard somebody else say this on a podcast, and this was truly my exact experience also. You know, for obviously a brief period of time, I thought the characters were real. And when my mom broke to me that these characters were not real, I think that she was very worried that I was going to like freak out to find out they were fake. And she told me they were people performing them. And I was so like, what? Oh, what do you mean? And she kind of explained that they were puppets. Like they're people who specifically work these things, and it's the same people who do the Muppets. And it just blew my mind. And so that became an obsession when I was a kid, just finding out about those core Muppet performers. And, I think that the idea that these people, these like six people, obviously it's more than that, but the core six people made hundreds of characters that were so distinct and different. It really kind of blew my mind. So I think that's kind of part of where it came from, and this idea that you can create these kind of things, especially because these puppets were so vibrant in their color and their fur, and the fact that that was something you can manufacture, that's something that you can make yourself, was really fascinating to me. So I think that's where that started from.
So on that topic, how do you like Muppets Now on Disney Plus?
It's so interesting. I actually think Muppets Now is pretty good. I actually really, really enjoyed it. I think, for me, as somebody who does not work with the Muppets franchise at all, I'm just simply a fan, so I have no idea how any of the creative decisions work. Something that for me that's been frustrating to watch with the Muppets is watching them try to be revitalized or watching them try to be changed. And, you know, I feel like with a lot of artistic properties, like or creative properties, it's very much necessary to constantly update, to constantly try to keep up with the times. But the Muppets, like, national acclaim comes from nostalgia, and it comes from generations of like parents showing their kids, you know, all of these different things. And I feel like the Muppets is one of those things that don't necessarily need to be, you don't have to reinvent the wheel with the Muppets. It's a very simple concept with them. They try to put on a show, but they're some of the most untalented people that have ever existed. And that's where the comedy and the heart comes from. And so it's been difficult to kind of watch that simple plot to some of these characters kind of get like, thrown around. But I actually think Muppets Now is such a return to form of like the Muppets are trying to put on a show and a bunch of things go wrong, which is just what the Muppet Show was. And I do like some of the updates, like it being over Zoom and it being kind of like a web series. Like, I think those kind of things are very smart. The things that don't infringe on their characters or infringe on the core of who the Muppets are. But when you start to mess with those elements, I feel like that's when they start to fail. But I think Muppets Now is a step in the right direction as in terms of what Disney can provide the Muppets as far as a artistic platform, if you so will.
And speaking of Disney, tell us about your favorite DCOMs, Disney Channel original movies, or shows.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So my friend Patrick Clanton actually has a really great page called Behind the Ears. It's a YouTube channel, and he basically reviews and... he reviews and he kind of analyzes all of these really old, like either Disney Channel or just straight up Disney properties that are actually even some Disney Broadway stuff that's really cool. And so, and it shows that like I haven't thought about in years, like Bug Juice and So Weird and, you know, some of these older shows that like that only lived like in the 90s. But some of the, like So Weird was a big show for me when I was growing up. And I would also say that as far as DCOMs go, Don't Look Under the Bed was such an important movie for me growing up, as was True Confessions. I think True Confessions was like a step in the right direction in terms of representation and visibility. I think that we obviously could handle subject and material like that a lot better these days, but I loved that True Confessions kind of like, especially for Disney Channel, could really like open that conversation up. And then I'm trying to think what else. The High School Musical series, obviously. Love the High School Musical series. Camp Rock. What else? Double Team and Motocross.
Oh, yes.
Loved Motocross. That was big. Everything with the Andrew Brothers, I think they were called. Anything with the three brothers, I was down for. There was one with horses that I loved. Johnny Tsunami. Am I crazy? That's a DCOM, right? Johnny Tsunami. I remember Johnny Tsunami. Yeah. Yeah. And I just watched The 13th Year for the first time in decades the other day.
Yeah, that was really good.
Fully shook. Yeah, love The 13th Year. But yeah, those, and then as far as TV shows go, like I loved Hannah Montana. I was a huge Hannah Montana person. Huge Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
I know. I was huge Sweet Life of Zack and Cody too.
Yeah, love Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. That's So Raven, obviously a classic, Proud Family. But I also like some of the older school stuff. Like I really loved Recess. I really loved, if we're going to take it to Playhouse Disney days, I love Bear in the Big Blue House. Like that is my jam. I love Rolly Polioli. Our boy Noel really hooked it up with that one. Bear in the Big Blue House, Rolly Polioli, PB&J, Otter, Stanley. That was what was up. Yeah.
And that is a nice segue into Hamilton now being on Disney Plus and you being in Hamilton. So tell us about that experience.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because I feel like a lot of people think that people in the cast always have like the inside scoop about everything Hamilton. And 9 times out of 10, we know just as much as everybody else. And I will never forget the day I found out that like Hamilton was going to Disney Plus, and I was just like in utter shock. And I was like, what? And all of us at the theater were like, what? it was just one of those really crazy moments. Like we were all just like, whoa, Disney just bought Hamilton. Like that's crazy to think about. Watching it, I watched it with a few cast members. And I think what was the coolest part about watching it was that, you know, you go on social media, everybody's texting me because I'm a part of the show. There's all these different things, but I think the coolest part is that when it came on to Disney Plus, I think the thing that really kind of blew my mind was that I was understanding that something I was a part of was on this platform that so many people had access to and that so many people were going to get to watch. And it was insane. Like it was genuinely insane to see like dance moves and lyrics and choreography and things that like I am a part of on this huge platform and on this thing that I love so much. I love Disney Plus. Like it's easily my favorite platform to use. And I think that was just such a unique experience that not every performer gets. And to watch that with other cast members who I've done the show with, and to be able to like see original cast members and be like, oh my God, that's what they do on that line. That's so different from what I do. Oh, I love what he's doing on this move. I'm going to steal that. Or, you know, just different things, because like only so many of us have seen the original cast. And even, you know, I saw the original cast. I don't remember anything from it. You know, I remember a couple things, you know, but I don't remember the full production. And, you know, at the point that I saw it, it was very early in the production. And at the time they filmed it was a year in. And so there were so many choices that were made. There were so many new things in everybody's life. Like everybody was in such a different place. It was after the Tonys. And so it was a lot of emotions, honestly, to watch it on Disney Plus. And it was really, I was really proud. I was really, really proud. That's probably the overall feeling.
It's about the audition process and what you said on the episode of DJ Bob you recorded with Bob and I, is that you got to meet and audition in front of Sir Alex Whackamore and you did not pee your pants. Tell us
about that. Yeah, I don't know how that happened. It was just wild because I remember, so the way that my audition process was basically the audition process for the tour, because I had auditioned like a couple other times before. The audition process for the tour, like I remember that I went in for our associate director. His name is Patrick Vassell. He works with Tommy Kail, especially on auditions and stuff. And he'll come and visit us on tour, or he'll come and see the show and give us notes and stuff. Patrick is a really great dude. I did like a work session with Patrick. And I remember in the callback, Patrick kept being like, yeah, when Tommy sees this, like he'll do this, that. And I was just like, oh my God, he's talking about Tommy Kail. Like, is he serious? Like, it just kind of like, it was a little too much for me, especially because like Tommy is a director that I really admire and really respect. And I kind of try to model the way I direct off of the way Tommy directs. And so when I finally got my final callback and they said that you're going to be in the room with some of the creative team, I don't know why I was like, that's not true. I was like, they're not going to be there. And I walk in and the first people I see are Alex Lacamoire and Tommy Kail. And they're like cracking jokes with each other and they're just being really chill. And that was kind of the crazy thing about the room. And I think that's part of the reason why I didn't piss myself in front of both of them. It was because they were so sweet and they were so like, hey, like, this is an audition. They were like, you know, sure, it's Hamilton, but, you know, it was 2 years out by the point that I was auditioning and they had already won the Tonys. They had already done this and they had done that. Like, they were still so heavily involved with the creative process and with the casting process. And that impressed me, not in a way that, like, you know, I wasn't trying to be arrogant about it. Like, it just genuinely impressed me that these creative team members, because in my opinion, in the typical Broadway world and what I've seen before, like usually once you've won the Tony or once the show is out, it's not often that the creative team will come back and still work on it in that minute of a detail, like not necessarily casting. Unless it's like with the producers or it's, you know, it's like the first international production or it's the first, you know, LA production. I didn't think for a national tour they were going to be there. And not only were they there, but they were so present and they were so willing to ask questions and talk to me and get to know me and really kind of just be there. And it was obvious that they were good people. And that was the best part about the entire thing.
So give us some insight into the mind of Alex Lacamoire and Tommy Kail.
Alex Lacamoire is one of the scariest people on earth in the sense that he will be in a room with a bunch of people. Like, I would say, like, he would hear the entire cast of like 35 or 40 sing, right? Even if that's not what it's supposed to be on stage, like when we were just learning the music, when we first started learning the music, he would come in about two or three times a week to help us learn some of the music. And so I remember one time he came in and was helping us learn Yorktown. And he was like, okay, great. We're going to do the last set of down, 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 freedom for America, freedom for France. And I want to hear it to the end. He was like, everybody stand up. So we were like singing and he was listening and he was just bobbing his head, closing his eyes. And then he stopped, he clapped. He was like, okay, give me a second. There's somebody in the alto section not singing the right note when they get to this part. I need you to tune it up. I believe it's you. And they were like, can I hear you sing it? And then that person was singing. He goes, yeah, it was you. So what you need to do is blah, blah, blah. He has the, like, it's not even the ears of an eagle. Like, eagles wish they had the ears that Alex Lacamoire had. This man is able to pull things out in these large group settings that are truly unbelievable. And obviously it's why he's so good at his job, but it was one of those things that I remember that I was like, not only does this man have incredible skill in terms of like listening and be able to pull things out, but he is so relentless in terms of us doing our best. Like even when we are doing our best, it's like, hey, you can always do better. Like you can always refine that. You can always tighten that up. You can always tune that up. And Alex Lacamoire came out to our tour, I would say 3 or 4 times to give us notes and to have a vocal, you know, cleanup with us while we were on tour. And every time he did, again, it was one of those things that really humanized these people for me and humanized the experience of Hamilton for me, where it was like, these people really care about the process of this show and they care about the integrity of this show. And they are putting so much effort into making sure that we are doing our best work. And I'll never forget. So Alex Lacamoire and I are from the same hometown. We went to the same high school at different times. But a lot of his professors at the performing arts school were my professors. And so when we were in Fort Lauderdale, he came down and he conducted for a weekend with us. I think he did 3 performances. And on that Sunday, which was our last performance in Fort Lauderdale, he had like bought, I want to say 500 seats from that theater, and all of them were for my high school professors. So like almost all of my professors were out there while Alex Lacamoire is conducting me and I'm in Hamilton, I'm in my hometown. It was a crazy weekend. But one of the craziest things was that his conducting is unlike anything I've ever seen, because this sounds so corny, but he is one with the music. Like he is so in the mood and the tone and the rhythms and the inner rhythms, like the syncopated rhythms, the, you know, the rhythms you might not hear. Like, he's just so in tune with it all. He understands and knows this music so well that when he's conducting, you feel it with him. And the show is just like so much more exciting than it already is. Like, the show is already crazy exciting. But when Alex was conducting, we were just like, we had the craziest shows with him conducting because it was just like, it just felt different, you know? And then Tommy is just like, Tommy is one of those people that, Tommy is one of those people that he loves harmony so much. I've heard him say that's his favorite word before. He loves making good work in peaceful settings. Like, he does not believe in agitation or frustration being involved in the workspace. And it's not a matter of like, if somebody's frustrated, he doesn't acknowledge it, but it's more that like, he's like, if there doesn't have to be a problem, I'm not going to go out of my way to make a problem. And it's not to say that most theater artists go out of their way to make a problem, but he is so intentional about the choices he makes as a director in terms of how they benefit the actor, how they benefit the story, that he because he's so intentional about it, he's confident in that. And if somebody is going to question it, it never is a matter of him questioning his ability or him questioning his talent or his creativity. He understands that at that moment, that was the best idea he was able to bring to the table. And if somebody else has an idea that, you know, challenges that, or that is, you know, quote unquote, better than his idea, he's never going to be in a place to be like, no, I'm the director, so what I say goes. It's always going to be, oh, that's interesting, let's talk about that. And how does that function in the story for you? Okay, cool. So what my vision is that I see it like this, but if you see it like this, we can definitely work around that. And that kind of collaboration is so important, is almost too obvious, but you know, in commercial theater or in theater that is the caliber of something like Hamilton, you don't always get that. You know, it can be very rigid. It can be very set in stone. It can be very inorganic. But the fact that Tommy really almost needs to work organically in that way makes it a completely different experience. And especially for a show like Hamilton that has a reputation that it has, it was very easy for all of us to come in worried it was going to be not what we thought it was. And because of someone like Tommy, it becomes more than what you expect. It becomes even more wholesome and more beautiful in a lot of ways. And then Andy is a mad genius. I don't work with Andy as often because he works mostly with the dancers, but like, Andy obviously is very involved with the principals, obviously, because the principals do dance in the show. But I definitely work more with Alex and with Tommy, and I have more of a relationship with the two of them. But Andy is just a truly insane genius. And he'll, you know, you could do something like a point to something. Like, you could literally just like point something in the show, and he will give you the full history lesson of why that point is so necessary to not only the story, but the historical context in which it is from, and how that is going to resonate with some other dance move later in the show that can involve like a body pump or something like that. Like, he is so specific in every single thing that he does, and he'll always be able to back up why.
So, my gosh, there's a historical context to a point. I never knew that.
Yeah, it becomes insane because you get some of these dance moves that you're like, oh, okay, I'll just, you know. And from the beginning, he was always like, if this feels good on your body, you're not doing it right. You shouldn't necessarily groove or enjoy. It has to be coming from a place of honesty, and it has to come from a place of storytelling. And if you throw something away, that's going to waste the rest of your show. And there are moves that, and everybody hears that and goes, yeah, of course, obviously, like I'm a professional, like I'm always going to do that. And you take something like a point and you're just like, oh, that's just a point. And he goes, it's not just a point. Do you know why you're pointing and who you're pointing at and who you're pointing for and what happens after you point? And it's like, no, I don't. He goes, let me tell you. And then honestly, after he tells you that, that point becomes so much more informed and it sets up the rest of your show to be a lot more truthful and honest. And that's what makes Hamilton so impactful. Like it's not even just the fact that the show is good, but it's the fact that everybody on that stage is committed 100% of the time to the action or the dance move or the song lyric that they are performing.
And the representation in Hamilton, can you tell us about that and your response to kind of the critics of that?
Oh, yeah. In terms of like having people of color portray these founding fathers. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's so interesting. The first time I ever heard about this show, it was my friend Daniel Watts. He's currently playing Ike Turner in Tina the Musical right now. And he was in the original workshops for Hamilton because he's also an amazing dancer. And when I was talking with him about it, it was before anybody knew anything. And he goes, I'm doing this show. It's called the Hamilton Mixtape. You know, it's this hip hop show with these founding fathers. And I was like, okay, buddy, whatever. I was like, if you're making money, then like live your life. But he was like, no. He's like, listen to me. This show is it. He's like, this is the show. He's like, this will change the world. Like everyone knew. He's like, as soon as it hits, it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be unstoppable. There's no way people are not going to fall in love with it. But I kind of was like, wait, hold on. I was like, so everyone, he said, yes. He said, every single person except the king is played by a person of color, most likely a black person, specifically to twist on its head the connotation of how we built this country. And it's one of those things that really threw me for a loop for like, I want to say 3 days, then I got over it. And I feel like that's everybody's response is that, you know, you watch the show or you listen to it and you're like, oh, God, it's 1770, whatever. And there's hip hop. That makes no sense. And then 10 seconds later, you're like, oh, OK, I get it now. All right, sure, whatever. And then you invest, you fully invest in. And it goes back to what I was saying about this idea of being intentional with everything that is created in the show and the performers having to give it the detailed and nuanced and honest performance that it requires. And that's the same thing with the casting. Like the casting, part of the reason the casting is genius is because, yes, the casting is necessary in terms of them being people of color because that's the point of the show. But once you erase that, there is no reason why Chris Jackson can't be George Washington. Chris Jackson is a natural born leader. He has the stage presence of a natural born leader. He has the stage presence of a president. You fully believe that he is the president of the United States when he walks out on that stage. And it has nothing to do with the color of his skin. It has to do with the intentional performance that's given. And that is from every single person on that show. It's the same thing with Leslie Odom as Aaron Burr. You fully believe the story of him and Hamilton, and it does not make a difference whether or not it's portrayed by a black person. But what makes it authentic is that Lin wrote this style of music that he said, I don't want this to be musical theater puts on R&B, musical theater puts on rap, hip hop. I want this to be rap and hip hop tells the story of this book that I'm reading right now, of this man's life. And the people that I know who can authentically bring this to life are people of color, specifically black and Hispanic people in my life, as far as I know, when it comes to the nature of hip hop. Obviously, Asian people, indigenous people are included in that. But when you look at that original cast, you see mostly Hispanic and black people, especially in the context of New York. And it's one of those things that, because the authenticity is so palpable, you don't question it. If it was a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, if they were trying to make fun of it, or if they were leaning too much into the fact, like, hey, guess what? We're doing rap. Hey, guys, guess what? We're doing rap. If they were too leaned into that, nobody would believe it. Nobody would take it for what it is. But it's because everybody is so committed and it's so intention-based and everyone is taking it seriously. Everybody is telling that story as if that is the only way to tell that story. And because of that, you believe it fully and you're able to let it go if you have any kind of prerequisites or you have any kind of preconceived notions about it, you know?
Tell us about Freestyle Love Supreme and what you thought of that. Were you able to see it live?
Yeah, I got to see Freestyle Love Supreme, I think, 3 times.
Jealous. Oh, my gosh.
I got to see it on Broadway twice, and then I went to a charity event that they were performing at. Freestyle Love Supreme, you know, that is one of those things that for me, I am not a jealous person, but when I watch Freestyle Love Supreme, I get incredibly jealous because I think that is a level of talent and a level of focus and natural skill that is hard to build upon. I think that there are a lot of things like you can be a good singer. You can learn to be a good singer. You can learn to be a good dancer. You can learn to be a good rapper. I had to learn to be a rapper to do Hamilton. I'm not a rapper naturally. And Freestyle Love Supreme, like improv is one of those things that it is almost, if you don't have the natural inclination to want to do or to be good at improv, you are going to have a hard time with improv. And so if that's the foundation, improv and then freestyle and then rap, singing and acting. And to be able to combine all of those things and make it as fluid as those people did was actually an insane experience. And what was even more insane was that just by happenstance, I went to go see the show twice, about 2 months apart, and I saw the exact same cast both times. And when I saw the cast the second time, I wasn't disappointed, but I was like, oh, okay, I wish I could have seen other people. I didn't recognize that they were going to do a completely brand new show. That just didn't hit my brain. And they did. They did an absolutely completely different show on Broadway. And it's actually the most insane thing that I have gotten the chance to see. And you know, I would do anything I can to be able to like be as good as someone like James, who's like the freestyle master, in my opinion, to do something like Freestyle Love Supreme.
I saw the documentary and you've seen the documentary, right?
I actually haven't. I actually have been waiting like to give myself a moment to like watch it, but I hear it's incredible.
It's incredible. And you'll get what I'm talking about when you watch it. But the scene where somebody yells out the word vibrator and they have to work it into the skit. Yes. And what is done with vibrator just blew my mind. And I have not thought about the word vibrator in the same way ever again.
Yeah, they're genius. They can take anything and make it a wrap, like absolutely anything.
Thank you so much to Fergie for coming on. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Fergster95. We'll have those links in the show notes, and we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Real Talk the Podcast. Connect with us on Instagram at Real Talk Pod Official, Twitter at Devin Real Talk, and Facebook at Real Talk Podcast Official. If you'd like to support the show, you can do that by using the link in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode. You've been listening to Real Talk the Podcast. Connect with us on Instagram at Real Talk Pod Official, Twitter at Devin Real Talk, and Facebook at Real Talk Podcast Official. If you'd like to support the show, you can do that by using the link in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.